There is no free lunch when it comes to investing, but what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to The Free Lunch, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to The Free Lunch Podcast with Blair and Colin today. Blair, good to see you.
Thanks for having me back, Colin.
Well, you know, Karen was busy, so I thought we better have you here.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Get me on. Put me to work for a little bit.
That's right. That's right. No, it's good to be back with you. And today we have a guest joining us. It's always easier when we have a guest. We have Marty Berkey from a law firm that he's going to tell us about in a minute. And he's going to tell us about his background and his story. And Marty's going to talk to us about family law today. And I was joking with the group when Marty was first got here, that this is the guy you kind of don't want to meet.
Because it means that you're getting divorced probably, right?
Yeah, or you want to be the first one to call him.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So anyways, Marty, thanks for joining us today on the Free Lunch Podcast. Really great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks guys. Excited to have you.
Yeah. So Marty, maybe tell us a little bit about your story. How did you get to where you are today? Because we know a little bit about it, but I think it's an interesting story.
Well, anyone in law school, you don't quite know what you want to do. So you just, you try and get a job. And I ended up going to Ernst & Young for my articles. I wanted to do corporate. Quickly realized that that was kind of boring for me. I didn't really like that. So
yeah,
I started to reach out to my contacts, and I reached out to Andy Hayer as we had a connection through coaching. He was a volleyball coach at SAIT, and I was a basketball coach. So reached out to him and said, you know, what do you do and what should I do? So he told me all about family law, and it sounded way more exciting than corporate GST.
Yeah.
So, yeah, after articling, I used my resources to network and found a job in family law. And I remember my first week, I had a trial in Lethbridge, and I went from a little cubicle of doing doc review to straight to the courtroom, and it was a rush.
Yeah.
And at that point I was hooked. I always like to say litigation is about as close to athletics as it gets, right? Mm-hmm. There's preparation, there's competitiveness, and then usually there's a winner and a loser.
Right, right. Well, and you know all about winning and losing, more winning than losing, because I don't want to just glaze over the fact that you're a pretty successful basketball coach. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was the head coach for the State Trojans with COVID. We did 9 years, but 8 seasons.
Yeah.
So it's been a while. I'm aging myself a bit, I guess.
Well, you're the youngest one in the room here, so you're not aging. You're aging well.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Yeah, and with the program, you guys did win a national championship, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, our last year we won a national championship. We had great group of guys, and before that we had 6 conference championships. So I was very blessed to do that, and my wife's very supportive of that. I asked her to calm down at some games a few times, but
yeah.
You know, very supportive, and our family is very fortunate.
That's good. And Blair, I mean, as a hockey coach yourself, a different level, but don't you always, what's your saying about like when you win, it's coaching and.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, if you're winning, it's coaching. If you're losing, it's the players.
Yeah.
So that's what kids. I always, yeah, those kids. But yeah, just a little bit off topic, but how did you get into coaching, especially kind of at a higher level with SAIT? How did you find out about that? What made you decide to do that, plus getting a law degree on top of that?
Oh, yeah. So I knew early on in high school that I wanted to coach college. That was kind of my, I want to go to the NBA, clearly. It didn't take long to figure out that wasn't going to happen. So I went, I played for Montana State, and quickly looked around and realized that I'm going to be the cheerleader on the end. So I asked the coach if there was a way I could transition into coaching, and they took me on staff right away. So I coached there for a bit. And then I moved to Vegas for a bit where I got to work at an NBA training facility, which was pretty awesome. And then I was on the Mexican border coaching at a junior college with my Canadian fiance, who absolutely hated it and said, Canada's better. I'm moving there. Are you coming with me? And that's what we did. So I moved to Canada and realized that coaching doesn't really pay the bills up here. So as I was kind of immigrating, looking for a job, I thought I'd just get a real job and took the LSAT and got the job at SAIT at the same time I got to law school. So it was just kind of a lot, but a lot of great things.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, and so transitioning into our topic today of family law, you're obviously used to juggling a lot of things if you're coaching basketball and going to law school. What are some of the big items that you run across with couples that are divorcing right now? What are some of the biggest items that you run across that people are juggling?
Well, there's different stages, right? So, and we get clients that choose to separate at all stages. Like some haven't even ever lived together. Some, you know, have teenagers and some are actually well retired. And mm-hmm. so we get the opportunity to see kind of couples at different stages. So I find the one I'm in right now is kids are in everything and you're running as fast as you can. And you're really starting to gain assets and kind of get established. So I find when you have couples that separate at that time, it's really challenging because mm-hmm. They're trying to separate their assets. They don't necessarily have enough to live the same lifestyle as they do together. And that's a really hard one for people to understand. Mm-hmm. And then you got the kids and the kids are in everything. And that really, even clients try not to use the kids as a power play, but you can kind of just see it in their responses. And you know, they're always saying, well, I think this is in the child's best interest or, mm-hmm. but a lot of times it's control. And that's a challenging thing for clients. So I think that is a real challenge when you're in the fast pace with your kids.
And yeah. Do you find that when you get a call, a referral, you know, those clients, whether it be younger or older, you're kind of, they've gone through counseling and all the steps and you're kind of like, hey, we know we're going down this road. Or you find people who are just kind of like, I'm not happy. You know, what's the process of going through a divorce?
Are you asking like for personal reasons?
Yeah, I know a guy.
So we get all kinds. We get clients that have been separated for 6 years and just didn't do anything. They just worked it out. We have people that are just looking to see what it would look like. I might be leaving, I might not. Or we get, you know, some of the more harsh ones where, you know, there's adultery or domestic violence and there's urgency and there's, or very frequently we get, hey, I was just served with this and I've got court on Friday. I don't know what I'm doing. Can anyone help me? But most of the ones we get now are generally, they know it's coming. It's just, they've tried counseling. It's just not working. And you know, they might have some corporations and there might be a high income earner that's trying to figure out what does support look like? What does parenting look like? Mm-hmm. What's the Mexico property? How do we divide that? So we get a lot of those too. So I guess my answer is all of them. As you said earlier, when people call me, they don't tend to be the happiest, right?
Like, yeah.
I always joke with colleagues that do like closed deals and stuff. Like, what's it like when a client calls you and they're happy, right? Like,
yeah.
But I kind of find that I do well in some chaos sometimes, and I do find joy in helping people through essentially the worst times of their lives.
Yeah. You know, I had a client who he was a lawyer, but he also owned a car dealership. I can't remember if I told you about him. I'd go see him every 3 or 6 months just to review his portfolio. And every time I'd go see him, he'd say exactly these words to me. How are things at home? I'd say, they're fine. And then he would say, don't ever leave her. It creates financial ruin. And he, It was like, it was almost like, do you know something that I don't know? Because he said this, we had this conversation a lot over the years, but yeah, so that must be the, I can just think of it as one of the hardest parts is like you just said, you know, Blair and I both have kids. My kids are a bit older than Blair's. My kids are just in the process of moving out. And when they're younger, you're running around, taking care of them, taking them to dance and gymnastics and basketball and hockey and whatever. And you're always busy. There's always something going on. But as they get older and they start dropping those activities and their level of engagement with you as a parent actually starts to go down, do you find that there's a lot of couples that then just struggle to be couples when everything was focused around the kids and now the kids don't need them anymore?
I do. I actually think it's funny. My wife always asks me this question. It's like, what are the main reasons people separate? And they, because there's a lot of podcasts and stuff where divorce lawyers speak to that. And I actually don't get into why they separate too much because I actually really focus on how I can help them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they're coming, all their emotions are flying 100 miles an hour. And really, I just need to focus on, are you separating? Are you not? There's a few reasons that, like adultery and stuff, there's some very small reasons that might matter. Mm-hmm. But I try to kind of lean them towards get a counselor because early in my career, I would really take on the human approach and then I realize that I'm a very expensive counselor and I'm not trained in it. So
right.
That's where I try to, from the beginning, from the first, is if they're not in counseling and if they want to speak to that, then I kind of lean them that way. So that way I kind of establish our roles in the client-lawyer relationship right away that I don't want to be rude.
Yeah.
And there's a way to do it that I'm just, but I also, I'm always mindful of people's bills.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
And I always, every client I meet, I say, at the end of this, when that glorious day happens when you no longer need me as your lawyer, I want you to be happy that you went with me. Mm-hmm. And that is, you don't have these large unnecessary bills and things get progressing. So I like to say that because then when they start going down the, you know, his new girlfriend is this, and I just really, okay, we're going to focus here.
Yeah.
You know, there's things I can help you with. There's things I can't. And so like to answer your question, don't really focus too much on why people separate. Mm-hmm. But what I do is people reconcile a lot. Mm. And that's why to get divorced in Alberta, you actually have to be separated for a year before you can actually file.
Yeah.
And the reason is, you know, sometimes they'll come and they had a fight or something and someone's kind of gung-ho and then they disappear for a little bit and we retain and we're following up. And then we just get the email that they got back together.
So right.
What I will do in a consult is if I start to get kind of, I want to say vibes. I like to say vibes.
Yeah, vibes is good.
Vibes that, you know, they're hurt, but they want to work it out.
Yeah.
I will always put that out there as well, right? Because I would say, you know, you guys can always get back together, and this is what it looks like if you do. Mm-hmm. And then another thing, people think that they need to act immediately. And, I can't leave the house because that creates status quo and now she keeps the house and I. So there's less urgency than people think. Mm-hmm. And the court understands that people reconcile and the Supreme Court of Canada actually described family law is the messiest area of law because families are messy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I will find in consults where I'll always, if I'm getting those vibes that might be on the table, I would say that's okay as well. If that happens, this is what it looks like.
Right, right. Blair, you got anything?
No, I just found that interesting and something I was going to ask in terms of, because I mean, it is, it's a very emotional event that's happening and kind of that separation because, you know, Colin and I have been in this business for a long, long time
yeah.
in different areas and have dealt with a lot of different clients going through this. And it's tough to kind of separate giving advice that's not, I'm sure a lot of clients want to hear something to make them feel better. And we try our best, but it's tough also to take a step back and just like this, you know, the selling of the home is one you hear all the time. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago talking with some seminar about marriage advice. And one thing that I did take away is the person just said, especially for those type of clients you gave an example for before, is sell the home. Both you go with a fresh start, but it's the hardest thing to do because that's, you
know, it was your family home.
Yeah. It's where I'm raising the kids. I never wanted to leave. And then it becomes a war.
Right. Well, okay. Let me ask you a very specific question then about, because that's a good segue. So they do sell the home and there's matrimonial assets. How are assets divided in Alberta? How is that dealt with?
So in Alberta, what I like to do when I get a new client in for a consult is I'll actually draw a circle on a piece of paper and I'll say, this circle represents your relationship from the day you moved in to the date of separation. And anything that was acquired, so that's assets, debt, income, during that circle is shared 50%. Mm-hmm. There are some exemptions in that, and I can talk through those. So, but first of all, anything outside of the circle, so a common one is like an RSP is a common one. People have an RSP. The value of that RSP at the date of moving in, so that's the date of cohabitation, is exempt. So it's never enters the circle. It never gets put in joint names.
Right.
It's completely exempt. But the growth of the RSP during the relationship may not be.
That right.
may be shareable. Another one is, because I also do estate litigation, people say, well, I'm going to get a large inheritance and I want to protect that. So inheritance or gifts from family are also exempt property as long as you don't put it into the circle. So what I mean by that is, a big one is, I get a large inheritance, so I just put it on the mortgage, right? And the mortgage is a joint asset. So what it's seen as is you're actually gifting half of that to the marriage. So because you're also part of the half of the marriage, you still get about 75% of that. But if you were to take that inheritance and put it into an RSP, which is in your sole name, not inside the circle, it is, except for the growth, it's completely exempt.
Right. That's an interesting point. I found it easy when I got married because my wife and I had nothing. I actually had debt. So she married into debt. So I won. I entered her circle. But you know, you do, as you grow and become established, you gather assets, as you said. And it becomes tricky, especially when you have, like, let's say it's a second marriage or a third marriage. And how do you deal with those circles, right? Like, that's, they have circles of circles.
Yeah, so especially when you have a divorce that takes 10 years, right? So a lot of times I'll get a file that I might be the third or fourth lawyer on it. They've been litigating for, I just finished a 5-day trial last year where they've litigated for 11 years.
Yeah.
And our kids are, I think the oldest is 15.
So right.
Basically the entire child's life they've been litigating. So the challenging part is, so the date of valuation of property when you divide it is the date of trial. So that's where it gets really challenging with these long delays, because the house is the easiest one to talk about because it most couples have a family home. So if they separated 10 years ago, one person has remained in the home, they got occupation of it to enjoy it, and then they paid the bills. There's a conversation of should they have paid rent, all of that kind of stuff. It's called occupational rent. But that house has probably increased in value significantly because of market forces.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we fight about all the time is that shareable, is it not? So most of the time it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that challenging one is when the new partner moves in.
Mm.
During that time, and they're still not separated.
Right.
And then they split up. So that would be their adult independent partner. So we've had situations where we've had multiple claims for like spousal support or partner support at the same time because they have a spouse and they have partner.
Sounds complicated.
What would you say just out of curiosity, I think I know the answer is probably it depends, which I say a lot, is what would you say is kind of the average time from the time you get a phone call from clients are separated to finalizing the divorce?
So every client asks that, and how much is this going to cost me? That's every first meeting I have with a client, and that's exactly the questions I would have. And I do have to give them that answer, but I get a little more specific. I said that depends on several things. Depends on the client, the opposing party, and the other lawyer. And because it's litigation, right? So at the very bare bones of it, if two parties can't agree, then someone has to make that decision. And if someone's going to make that decision, it's expensive.
Right.
So and then in negotiations, if you guys aren't close, and the more complicated it is, there the more steps there are, because one party can sit there and say, I can't consider this because I need this information. Mm-hmm. And everyone always thinks that people have offshore accounts. It's squirreling money, and there's just there. Yeah. I know they are. I absolutely know they are. And then I just have to have the honest conversation. It's like, Okay, well, you've been with them 20 years. What kind of lifestyle have you had? And is this person good with money? Is this person capable of potentially hiding money to where we could bring in a forensic accountant? And I'm always doing the juggling with clients, because I said I never want to recommend someone spend $50,000 potentially chasing 20.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. When I get the, oh, he's hiding money, I know he is. He's got offshore accounts, or he's just cash. Cash is a big one. He's like, he's renovating basements in his free time. And I was like, well, you were with him 20 years. How many basements did he renovate? And yeah, how much free time does he have?
Yeah.
Like, and then they're like, well, I know he did one once. And you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to give you some numbers. If you add that to his income, here's the difference in support. Mm-hmm. You've just spent more talking about this in this one meeting than that would actually change anything.
Right, right. Well, actually, let me ask a follow-up question to that then, and it has to do with support payments. And let me preface it this way. We had somebody referred to us a few months ago who was going through a divorce, and they're just in the midst of negotiating what that looks like, and they have kids, right? And so they're asking our opinion on the amount of spousal support that was being suggested, to which, I mean, I don't know how to answer that personally, you know, other than to say you should call Marty, right? But there's got to be a big difference in how spousal support and child support is calculated across the provinces, and maybe specifically in Alberta. How is it calculated?
So we actually have two softwares that we use that do it, but child support and spousal support, very different. Child support, well, first of all, when we go, what are people's incomes? So a lot of the files that get referred to us, there's complicated incomes, corporate structures. They're just not T4 employees.
Yeah.
Right. So to keep it simple, if you're just a T4 employee, they look at, okay, child support comes first. So they look at parenting time. If one parent has over 60% of the time, parenting time, then it gets into what's called Section 3 of the Federal Child Support Guidelines, and they call it the table amount. The reason they call it the table amount, there's actual tables in the guidelines, and they go, what's your income? So that's your T4 amount. How many kids do you have? That is how much you pay each month.
Right.
So that's the simplest way to do it. If the parenting time is between that 40 and 60, you're under Section 9, which is shared parenting. And that's where it gets a little more discretionary. But they look at essentially the offset. So what's the table amount from one parent to the table amount to the other parent? Starting point would be the offset is what's payable each month. Mm-hmm. And then they get into Section 7, which is extracurricular activities, medical expenses, you know, stuff that those can add up quite quickly, especially you start playing hockey and stuff like that. So The way that that's calculated, it's in the same software, but it's all driven off of the incomes. Mm-hmm. And that's proportionate to your incomes.
Right.
So where it gets complicated and we have to work things through is when someone's because people say, yeah, here's my notice of assessment. I made 20 grand last year. Like, yeah, well, you're self-employed. So yeah. you decide what you pay yourself. So the court rolls their eyes at that.
Right.
And then we have to get into the financial statements and say what actual finances are available to pay child support.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of what we deal with.
Right.
Especially if you have interest in multiple different corporations. We do a lot of family farms, and those can get quite contentious. And then it's, you kind of have the, okay, well, we're going to lease this together and we're going to share this equipment, mm-hmm. and we're going to live here for free, and we have to kind of work all that out. What is the actual income or benefit for that? It's not what the CRA does. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the starting point, but people think, well, this is what my accountant said, so that's what it is. That's not necessarily the way we go about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess if you pay yourself a $20,000 salary, but you've got $1 million in a holding company that you've been taking revenue from the operating company, that's a big, there's an issue there, right?
I've had files where opposing counsel has actually made an offer specifically like that. It says that my client, who is a T4 employee, who's a teacher, mm-hmm. needs to pay their client because they only make $20,000 a year, and they have millions in assets in three different corporations.
Right.
And you're just like, when I get into those situations, we're just so far apart. I just say, let's get into either mediation, arbitration, or let's just go to court, because I'm not going to convince you.
Yeah.
And I always get those clients that like, I need a shark, I need a tiger, I need a bulldog.
Yeah.
And I instantly kind of talk them away from that, because there's a style of practice that way where you get an 8-page letter, I'm going to burn your house down, and your client did this, 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 and this, and this is how I see the law. And then I write the same thing back to them. And next thing you know, you're just, months have gone by and letters have passed that no one will ever read, and clients get big bills.
Yeah.
And I have to tell clients, I won't engage with that, because no lawyer is ever going to get my letter and say, you know what? He's right. I am wrong. Let's take this offer, because I was wrong the whole time.
Yeah, I thought about it, and I just realized I was asking for too much.
Yeah, you know, it's just, your income is 1.5, not 20,000.
Yeah.
So
do you find that, or I guess, would you say it's important, though, to have everything kind of in the agreement written down when you talk about Section 7 and paying for sports and that, rather than, oh, I trust her or him that they'll cover those costs. You want them kind of, hey, let's make sure there is an agreement in place that those are covered. And then if you want to, you know.
So what we work out, it's really case by case, because I have had files that they work very well together, mm-hmm. and they don't put the kids at the middle, and they do want the kids in certain things, and they're generally in agreement. So with those, our agreements are basically more broad. And then we have clients that, one of my favorite justices always says, these people can't agree on the color of an orange. Those, like, our agreements are hundreds of pages and extremely restrictive. But the challenge that we have, people come to us and they want a one-stop shop, one agreement that will manage all the conflict in their separation to the end of time. And I would love to build that document,
mm-hmm.
but things change all the time. Kids change.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of build in, there's always terms or as agreed between the parties in writing. So Blair, talk about Section 7. Sometimes we'll say, we know the kids are in this, so we'll carve those out, that they'll continue on this. This is how the Section 7s will be shared. Or they can say, we set out the process that one party says, makes a proposal. I want the kids in this. Mm-hmm. This is what it costs. The other party has a certain amount of time to say yes, no. And we always say that their consent won't be unreasonably withheld.
Mm-hmm.
So an example would be like, I want the kids in swimming. You know, it's $200.
Yeah.
To say no to that when you make $300,000 a year, that's unreasonable. But, I want my kids to go to the Edge school and be trained in hockey all day, every day, and it's $50,000, and your income's about $60,000. That's a different story.
Yeah, yeah. Also unreasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, we are going to run out of time, but before we do, and I feel like we're just scratching the surface here with you, you know, maybe tell our listeners a little bit about your firm.
Yeah, so I work at Hare Lee. Almost been open 2 years, so October 2023. It's going very well, growing fast. I love where I work. It's great people. We do majority family law. We do all divorces and appeals. I'm currently growing our estate litigation practice, so I'll also do estate litigation. There's a lot of crossover in family and estates, so we also do that as well. But we do a lot of high net worth divorce. We have a recent decision. Andy at our firm had a long trial with developing the law in spousal support with adult independent partners when our client was a billionaire and there was a large support claim, and that was, it's quite an interesting case.
So yeah,
that's
yeah.
kind of what we do, but it's not just high net worth. It's anyone that is going through separation or people that want to protect their assets. A big call we get a lot is from parents that say, my son's moving in with someone and, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, they're not common law.
So
that's
yeah.
what the adult independent partners are, is another term for common law, and they just want direction around that.
Right. Well, you know, I've only ever known one billionaire in my life, but he got divorced, so he's not a billionaire anymore. But yeah. I think he'll get back there. But
till his second divorce.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, we could go on and on. But thank you for your time today, Marty. Really appreciate you coming on. And Blair, would we recommend those in need reach out to Marty and his firm?
Yeah, definitely. This was a great conversation. And yeah, even before in the green room when we were talking, some great stuff. So I definitely recommend reaching out to Marty if you need a service.
Wait, we have a green room?
I had air quotes.
Oh, okay.
Green room. Okay. Our waiting room.
Our waiting
room. The two chairs in our lobby.
All right. Thanks, Marty. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.